Good evening, it's 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Juliana Gonsalves. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie. Let's start off with your local news headlines. This year's Kingston Tim Hortons Smile Cookie Campaign, running April 27th to May 3rd, is supporting the Jumpstart Inclusive Playground at a critical moment as the project nears the finish line. Now in its 30th year, the Smile Cookie campaign began in 1996 in support of the Hamilton Children's Hospital. Since then, the annual campaign has raised over $150 million through cookie sales for charities and community groups selected by restaurant owners. Here in Kingston, that support is going toward the Jumpstart Inclusive Playground, a community-driven initiative led by Inclusive Play Project volunteers. The group came together with the goal of building a playground tailored to a wide range of physical abilities and sensory needs right here in Kingston, where children of all abilities can play, connect, and belong. The project broke ground in Shannon Park earlier this month, and construction is expected to be complete later this summer. The $1.5 million project is now about 92% funded. The hope for Inclusive Play Project volunteers is that this Smile Cookie campaign can bring them past the finish line. I stopped by Tim Hortons on Princess Street to speak with owner Sherry Agnew ahead of the campaign launch. Well, to start us off, I was wondering if you could speak to what makes the Smile Cookie campaign such a meaningful way to give back.
It's really just for us and our staff to try to, you know, raise some money that we know that will stay locally in Kingston.
And I was wondering if you could speak to the choice and the importance of supporting the Inclusive Play Project this year.
Well, we just really felt like there was a need in the community and to help this project. I know that they've done a lot of their fundraising already, and we are hopefully going to get them to the finish line.
Yeah, you mentioned they're almost at the finish line. How impactful could this campaign be in getting them there?
We really hope that we can close the gap in their funding with this week full of sales of cookies. So, and they hope to have it open in September.
And how does the community usually show up for this campaign? What do you normally expect and what are you hoping for this year?
Kingston is just amazing, actually. We break records in Eastern Ontario, and per capita, we actually sell more cookies in Kingston, Smile Cookies, than Ottawa. So Kingston gives back in an amazing way, and the Smile Cookies, I think everyone, you know, it's a wonderful product and a great way to give back to when you know it's going to be locally used, the money, 100% of it.
Awesome. And there's a few different ways folks can contribute other than just buying a cookie. What are some of the ways that folks can get involved?
We have, if you don't eat cookies or cannot eat cookies, we have plushies, little stuffed cookies that you can buy for $5. You can also just make a donation. There's volunteering. We have people volunteering to help us decorate cookies, which kind of helps. It's a very busy week and it's a lot of cookies.
And what does it mean for you personally to be able to support this project in our community?
We're just so happy as store owners to be able to give back to the community in which we do business. Kingston's been very good to us, so we want to give back into the community and bring projects to light that maybe don't get the exposure that they deserve.
And how's the energy been leading up to this? How are you and your staff feeling walking into the week?
Everyone's pretty excited because it's a new charity for us and it's something different. And who wouldn't want to help every child be able to go to a playground?
Once again, the Smile Cookie campaign runs from Monday, April 27th through Sunday, May 3rd, with 100% of proceeds supporting the Jumpstart Inclusive Playground. Kingstonians are already showing up, with volunteer cookie decorating shifts filled for the entire week. To learn more about the campaign and the Inclusive Play Project, visit inclusiveplayproject.com. At their last meeting, Council considered Kingston's approach to the new provincial Bring Your Own Alcohol Permit option. Starting April 30th, Ontario is expanding BYOB permits to designated outdoor public events like farmers markets, festivals, and art exhibits. According to the release from the province, the aim of the initiative is to cut costs for both event goers and organizers. However, it is up to municipalities to opt in by passing a bylaw authorizing the use of alcohol in public and establishing a local process to determine whether an event qualifies. Staff brought a report to council recommending the city further explore potential implementation approaches and public consultation before later returning to council with recommendations to consider participation in the provincial BYOB framework. Councillors were overall unimpressed with the move by the province, but had slightly differing opinions on how to respond. Councillors like Don Amos argued the idea should be rejected outright, raising concerns about enforcement, liability, communications, and even litter.
I'm going to start off by saying I'm not in favor of this. I don't think we need to go down this road. I don't think we need to have our staff utilize their time in a deep dive endeavor that the province feels that everyone can drink whenever they want, however they want, in an event. And I think that sets various events up for failure, concerns. We already have a licensed beverage system that works in the city. The province is giving us an opt-out. I would strongly encourage my fellow councillors to vote no on this. We don't need to entertain this. We don't need to have someone show up with a keg to a random event or a cooler full of beer to a random event, set up their lawn chairs, enjoy the event, and then all of a sudden everything breaks loose and we don't have control mechanisms in place. And as indicated, our bylaw team is already stretched thin. Our police force, as we've heard multiple times from our police chief, is stretched thin. So now we're leaving it to the event organizers to manage this, and that's not a realistic expectation, I think, that can be met.
Beyond the logistics, councillors also more broadly questioned the province's priorities.
I appreciate my colleagues' measured remarks because mine are not going to be measured. I was looking at the budget and looking for any type of resources for housing and homelessness or anything related to the environment and climate change, and I saw that the province was letting us have people bring their own beer to a park. Wow. This is what the province is handing us for additional municipal tools for the problems that we're having in our city. Who's asking for this? I actually think Councillor Amos said it very well. We're going to devote our time and resources on this, on an issue that isn't a problem, and they're offering us a solution. What's with this province and alcohol, Your Worship? I have no idea that the solution for everything is, oh, we have an infrastructure problem? Go down to your corner store and grab a six-pack of beer. Oh, we have a housing and homelessness issue? How about bring beer to a park? Like, what is this? Why are we exploring this? My vote on this is going to be no, just because I'm so infuriated that this was a mispriority of this government. I think it's just out of gas, Your Worship.
City staff noted that part of the strategy for bringing the report to council was to raise awareness about the changes and what they could mean locally. Councillor Connie Glenn echoed this, emphasizing the importance of getting all the information and providing clarity to the public.
Anecdotally, and certainly through comments that have been made, we have a pretty good idea. But the reality is every time something comes forward from the province, we get a community that's divided about their thoughts on it. So going back to, I think, one of the core things that we've done around this horseshoe over the last few years is we make sure that we've got all the information. I have no issues getting information. Yes, I would prefer that they spend more time at the provincial level concentrating on housing and homelessness. And, I was hopeful the premier would just donate his plane because we sure could use one here. but seeing as that's not reality, I would like us to stay grounded in getting good information and evidence. I'm not supportive of, obviously, overtaxing any of our staff. I'm also not in support of seeing debauchery on the streets, but at the same time, I want to give unequivocal answers to the public on what this really means to our city.
Mayor Brian Patterson capped off the conversation, acknowledging the dilemma, but also noting that council can revisit the issue in the future if needed.
I think at the heart of this is, on the one hand, wanting to get information in order to make an evidence-based decision one way or the other. On the other hand, I'm also sympathetic to the argument of why waste staff's time if we are absolutely already convinced this is not a road that we want to go down. So I think that's the question that I think we're confronted with. I think that Councillor Osanek actually raises a good point, that there's always an opportunity to bring something forward again if we find that there's an opportunity or a proponent that really wants to push for this. But I tend to agree that we've got a lot going on as a city. Our staff time is valuable. And I think our staff are hearing the debate around the table right now. There's no way that this would pass. So I think given that, my preference would be just to give staff a clear no at this point, and let's have them work on other projects that are more important for the city.
In the end, the motion was unanimously voted down, meaning the city will not move forward with further investigation and will not participate in the program at this time. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk with your sports report, and tonight we're talking about the CFL Draft, which is scheduled to take place tomorrow at 7 p.m., a launching point for Canadian collegiate players that are looking to make that jump into the pro ranks. This year's draft is heavy on top-tier NCAA talent. The projected top pick is Ottawa's Akeem Mezador, an overager defensive lineman from the University of Miami. Mezador played 3 years of high school football in Ontario before transferring to a school in Florida. Mezador would earn scholarship offers from a number of NCAA Division I programs before ultimately committing to West Virginia. After three strong seasons as a Mountaineer, Mezador would transfer to Miami, where he was a key player for the Hurricanes, who finished 2025 with a close loss to Indiana in the college football national title game. It is worth noting that Mezador is also projected to be a first-round NFL draft pick, which may discourage teams from selecting him in the early rounds of the CFL draft. There are six Queens Gaels who are eligible for selection in the CFL draft. Alex Vraken is rated as the draft's fifth best quarterback prospect. Scouts were impressed with his pocket mobility and arm talent, but he's not expected to be taken in the draft. It looks likely that Vraken will return to Queens in the fall for his fifth and final year of eligibility. H-back Liam Silverson scored a viral moment at the regional combine with an incredible one-handed catch, but some testing struggles will likely discourage teams from drafting him. Free safety John Korskaden attended the CFL regional combine in Waterloo, but his smaller frame and more cerebral skill set tend not to translate well in a physical testing environment, so it's unlikely he'll be drafted either. The three Gaels with the most buzz in the CFL draft are defensive lineman Stephen Kapea, linebacker Justin Pace, and offensive lineman Nicholas Henning. Kapea turned heads with his regional combine performance at Waterloo. His measurables were so strong that they earned him a trip to Edmonton for the national combine. Though he is undersized for his position on the defensive line, Kapea is immensely athletic with blinding speed and an impressive collection of pass rush moves. He is projected as a late round project player, but it's possible that he may go undrafted and try to earn a spot on a team with a training camp invite. Linebacker Justin Pace earned a national combine invite thanks to 3 years of impressive all-conference and all-Canadian caliber play. The Montreal native played his high school football in Florida before committing to Queens in 2021. Pace would likely go in the draft's later rounds if he's drafted at all. An inside source reported that Pace has been in discussions with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Edmonton Elk in particular. He does plan on returning to Queens for his fifth year regardless of how the draft shakes out. No other prospect has risen the ranks as quickly as Queens offensive lineman Nicholas Henning. An H-back turned tackle, Henning has impressive physical measurables standing at an imposing 6'7" and weighing just under 300 pounds. He also boasts long, powerful arms and a shocking level of agility and overall athleticism for a man of his size. Henning turned in an outstanding national combine, receiving a grade of 91.2 out of 100, by far the highest score of all the players who participated. He is projected to be the first U Sports player drafted, likely in the early to mid second round, but it would not surprise me to see him taken as a first round draft pick. Heading has also received interest from a handful of NFL teams, including the Arizona Cardinals. Nicholas Henning does have another year of U Sports eligibility, so it is possible that he returns to Queens in the fall for another year of seasoning. The CFL Draft begins at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night and can be watched on TSN. You can also follow along on the CFL's social media accounts to get a minute-by-minute breakdown of each of the players taken. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, April 27th. Beautiful day here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of 16 degrees, feeling closer to 19 thanks to all that brilliant, beautiful sunshine, dropping down to 8 overnight. Tuesday, April 28th, we return to the normal here in Kingston, and by that I mean we've got more rain in the forecast, a 94% chance of precipitation, daytime high of 13 degrees, going to feel closer to 9 thanks to the rain, and it will stay around 9 degrees overnight. Wednesday, April 29th, slightly cooler here in the city of Kingston, the sunshine is back, but we've got a low top-end temperature of 12 degrees, dropping down to 6 overnight. Final day of April, Thursday, April 30th. 12 degrees is your high, but we're going to have a lot of sunshine, so it's going to feel closer to a very temperate 15 degrees, dropping down to 5 overnight. And we've got a chilly start to the month of May. Friday, May 1st, daytime high of 11 degrees, going to feel slightly warmer thanks to the sunshine, right around 14. But there is about a 50% chance of rain in the afternoon. Saturday, May 2nd, that rain's going to cool things off. We've got a high of just 9 degrees with an overnight low of 4. Sunday, May 3rd, another 9-degree day, partly sunny conditions, dropping down to 3 overnight. And then starting off next week, Monday, May 4th, 11 degrees is your temperature, but we've got a 75% chance of precipitation, which is going to cut that in half, feeling closer to 6 degrees. So a bit of a rainy start to next week, all things considered. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with some partial road closures slash construction that'll have minimal traffic impact. Stephen Street from Cowdy to Montreal Street. Expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals, or IPS. The city is installing these IPS units to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. IPS units are being installed at the following intersections: Bath Road at Lafleur Park, Concession Street at Kings Court Avenue, and Stephen Street at Patrick Street. For more information, you can visit the City of Kingston website. On the note of partial road closures, bear in mind that King Street West at Country Club Drive to Front Road and Sand Bay Lane is single lane traffic only for the installation of water main and sewer pipes for Utilities Kingston. This has been an ongoing long-term closure, and as we start to ease into the summer, it looks like this closure will be in place indefinitely. In terms of long-term road closures, we're going to see a long-term closure, Princess Street from Frontenac Street to Division. It started on April 20th. The City of Kingston and Utilities Kingston will begin reconstruction of Princess Street. This major infrastructure project includes upgrades to underground and above-ground utilities, as well as improvements to enhance safety and comfort for pedestrians and cyclists. So that's a big, long-term road closure impacting Princess Street from Frontenac to Division. Ferry to Queen is still closed due to construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is still closed to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. And just a reminder that the load restrictions are still in effect for heavy-duty trucks, which are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions will expire as of May 1st. But if you are someone hauling a heavy load, please keep an eye on the relevant signage. That's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for this week. Please remember to pay attention to the posted signs and drive safely.
This is Christina Laurie coming back with just some of K-Town's events coming up this week, a solid mix of staples and a few things worth planning around. After this show wraps up, karaoke at Time Up Bar gets going at 6, followed by a full lineup of trivia, One Eye Jacks at 7, The Brass Pub at 7:45, and Something in the Water Brewing at 8. Tuesday, April 28th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 5 in Springer Market Square. In the evening, Euchre at Daft Brewing starts at 7. Wednesday, April 29th, an easy midweek mix, board games at Something in the Water at 5 and the Royal Canadian Legion at 6, karaoke at Time Out Bar at 7, and trivia at Daft Brewing at 7. Later on, the Grad Club hosts a drag and burlesque show with Universe and friends at 8:30. Thursday, April 30th, the public market is back from 8:30 to 5. The evening is stacked, trivia at Riverhead and drag bingo at Daft Brewing, both at 7. Music trivia at Something in the Water at 8, and trivia at Queen's Pub at 9. Karaoke runs at Jersey's at 8:30 and The Buckle at 9, and we have the weekly Urban Music Social at La Vida starting at 9:30. Friday, May 1st, keep it simple, trivia at Wild Wings Kingston at 7, then karaoke at Daft Brewing and The Buckle at 9. Saturday, May 2nd, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 5. In the afternoon, the Band ReFoundation Spring Awards take place at Grant Hall starting at 2. Frozen in Time, a storytelling sing-along, runs at the Spire from 2:30 to 7:30. Then in the evening, the Retro Rewind Roller Disco and Vintage Market takes over the Memorial Center starting at 6. Finishing off the week on Sunday, May 3rd, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 to 1. Always a good way to ease into the day. Later on, if you don't want the weekend to end too early, karaoke at The Merchant and The Toucan both start at 9. Have an event you'd like to add to our online and on-air events calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. For more details on all these events and more, check out the full calendars on cfrc.ca. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.